Blog Talk Radio.
So far, and I hope you all have a better weekend ahead. Always got to say it. I can't help myself. But see now, happy Friday. Thank God it's Friday. Woohoo for Friday. Hi, Rex. How are you?
All right. How about you?
Crazy as ever. You know, I'm doing all right, I guess. I'm doing all right. It's been kind of an uneventful. Sorry?
I said, hello, Casey. She says she's listening.
Oh, hello. I didn't see her. Hello, Casey. Woohoo. Yes, yes. That's good to know. Someone is listening. Listening. But,
Oh, I like that. Where would you like me to be from today, Casey?
Rex, you'd be from wherever he wants to be. Every other day, maybe. I don't know. Oh, my gosh. Too funny.
All right. Let's get it going now. Why don't we?
There he goes. See? Another great country heard from. Too funny. So, no, Rex, it looks like we got a good board tonight. A busy board. Let's put it that way. Always nice. I like that. And yes. all kinds of goodies. We got some carryovers, and we got some new ones. And yes, yes, yes. Looks like fun. So I guess, I don't know, you want to get this party started?
Sure. Let's get into it and have some fun.
Okey-dokey. Well, oh, there's Rex on the board. Hello, Rex on the board. The aliens. Okay, Rex, I'll tell you what.
Well,
I'm going to put the first one up.
Say, young lady, I think the peaches are now in season.
Hello, Rick. That's funny, Rick would show up because I was just going to say, I'm going to put a piece on the board by Wichita Rick so you can start it off, Rex. Well, here we go. Good timing, Rick. Good timing. Here we go.
Waiting in line by Wichita Rick. Waiting in line. Take your place. This is not a race. Soon to ask if what you brought here was worth the price. I just want to pay to not stand idle and reminisce. That full cart and those five kids ahead should have been a sign of a long day. Never consider stealing, but this has me reeling, rethinking my vow to always play nice. Open the aspirin first, now considering buying beer. My morning smile has turned to a leer. Mom forgot something, sent head child back into the wild, fighting time. Who am I to criticize? Inquirer screams, UFOs here. Looking around, that is clear. Now noticing for the first time all the kinds of mints and gum sold here. Dripping ice cream has me about to scream. The quality of my dinner determined by whatever else she buys. Muzak and me are about to have an epiphany. One more note could be all she wrote. The elevator sounds of the 70s are becoming surreal. Patrons starting to pay heed. They also want speed, pacing like bulls before the race, just waiting to terrorize. Checker changing color, her eyes growing colder, while Bagger acting bolder, getting a few munchies is spinning into quite the ordeal. Her order finally tallied. Cheers break out from those who rallied. She forgot her money, so quickly I pay her fare, just to escape, not caring if it is my own bills that are compromised. End poem.
Nice to read that. Nice to read.
Now, who has been in on one of those lines?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I have. I know I have. Many times. You get in those grocery stores, or even, you know, well, it could even be Walmart, you know, the grocery / everything else store. And you get in that line, and there's a whole family. It's like, oh, no. You know, she's going one way or another and wanting this and wanting that. Oh, God, yeah. And all the little things at the end of the checkouts, you know, candies and all that good stuff. And yeah, nothing gets moving too fast. I know the kids get there, can I have candy? No, you can't have candy. Can I have this? No, you can't have that. Oh, yeah, so it gets a little crazy from time to time. But, yeah, from aspirin to beer, I can dig it. I can dig it. You know, sometimes it's just you just don't want to deal with the hubbub, to put it nicely. But well done, Rick. Good humor. Nice job. Yeah, nicely written. I think we can all read
it.
Very relatable.
Oh, yes. Quite the relatable piece, considering everybody has at least gone through this once, if not 1,000 times, because you know what? When you drop in the fact that the Inquirer screams UFOs are here, you know you've been waiting in line too long that you're actually looking at the Inquirer or one of those other ragbacks just for a little distraction, so you don't scream.
Yeah.
Out of thought for a second. Checker changing color, her eyes growing colder, while Bagger acting bolder, getting a few munchies, is spinning into quite the ordeal. Oh, geez, there is a note to, I remember back in the day, you could actually walk in the store, there weren't computers back then, everything was rung up properly, and you didn't spend that much time in the bloody store. Nowadays, it seems it doesn't matter, all of a sudden, the laser beam doesn't work on the runover, and all of a sudden, oh, It's an ordeal. Now we got to punch in all the bloody numbers off the UPC code, which makes it even more funnier. Oh.
Got it.
And, I do like that. Hey, I forgot something. One of the kids goes back into the store looking for what she got. 10 minutes later, they come back. But I do like that last one. The hell with all this. I'll pay for it, lady. Just get me the hell out of here.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah, because we have
nice
to so
done.
Long.
Nice
and done. Absolutely. Oh, so true. So, so true. Yes, I get it. I was just trying to read the room. Sorry. Kind of got lost there for a second.
No, that's fine because Rick just put up, literally paid a lady's bill. Just
go,
so we could get out. Oh.
Yes. You know, now they have the ones where you go and you have to check out your own or they'll check it out for you. And either way you go, it's still slow. Because the one you check out on your own.
Oh, yeah. The self-checkout, there's never enough of them.
Yeah.
And even with the ones for the checkouts, there's more aisles closed than there are open. Oh, that's kind of pointless.
Absolutely. Yep, yep.
Check on your hour of runs. Put some more people on the register.
Absolutely. I saw,
it's not like you don't know
something.
When they're coming in the door.
Right. I saw something over on Facebook, I guess, a few times now. And it says something about, the self-checkouts, how I got this job without any training. What do you want from me? Self-checkout can be pretty frustrating because, by the time you put it down, pick it up, move it here, move it there, or scan it again. I was like, wow, forget it. It's a no-win sometimes. It's a no-win. But it's okay. Good job, Rick. Good job.
Well, hell, if it doesn't work on the first scan, put in your own price. Hey, 5 cents.
Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be nice? Now, then they say, I wish. Wouldn't that be great? Oh,
well,
Lord.
I should teach the geeks to get their shit together and have everything updated properly.
Yeah. How true is that? So, come on, wake up now. Pay attention.
Hey, thanks for this 48-inch TV for $5.27.
There you go. Well, listen, Rick, if you get bored, you can call in. Casey, you too. We'd be happy to share some time with you guys. And in the meantime, I'm going to put up a piece by Jesna Sajan. And it's called Welcome to the Jungle. This is for your show, Lassie. Woo-hoo. Welcome to the Jungle by Jesna Sajan. The jungle is wondrous, a vast expanse of livelihood, of animals, birds, and primeval forests, desert wasteland surrounded by trees, bush, wood, and numerous morass, mellow, warm, sonorous chirping of wild birds in the distance, full, clear sky of expansive brilliance, vibrant singing of wild animals, elephants, monkeys, bright, lustrous stream of rivers and waterfalls, thick grandeur of mighty mountains, hilly plains, weighty, powerful sounds of the transcendental supernatural, silky whispers of the dense lands, lively, incisive, eloquent, and sensuous, with round, pure, muffled throat, open, sustaining, solemn, wafting gentleness of the jungle and its enchanting zoo with open expansiveness. And so on.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. I like the, this came off the two cellos contest 2 weeks ago, Welcome to the Jungle. By Guns N' Roses. I like her thoughtness for the literality that she exposed, that note to the driven sound equating the wildlife, something you could close your eyes and dip into the visuality exposed, whether it's the chirping of the wild birds, the animals, the elephants, monkeys, the sounds, the waterfalls, the sights, what you can see, smell, and hear in the moment with your eyes closed, while listening to those guys having a grand time on those cellos. The literal thought that you equated to this. It was nicely done.
I said there was a whole lot of description going on here. Absolutely. It was nicely penned, and I wanted to thank Desna for sharing. She goes on, you know, and it's so dense with descriptive words, you know, between describing the rivers and waterfalls and, you know, the mountains and just the animals. I mean, I think that she really put a lot into this, a whole lot of thought, and, she really, I don't know, it was just really strong in that respect. So nicely done, and thank you, Desna. Absolutely. Absolutely. Here we go. Woohoo. I don't know. Hang on a second, Rick. Oh my God, Lex, hang on.
Okay.
I got to put something up. My grandson walked in the door, and I'm like, got the hand up in the air saying, shh. So I'm going to copy this. Yeah, it gets a little crazy here. Okay, I'm going to put this next one up for you to read by Luke J.R. And hopefully that will... Yes, there they went. Okay, thank you. Thanks for asking.
Signal, Red Hughes, by Luke J.R. Signal, lower than the mood light, torn fabrics, crushed bricks, wheels still rotating, broken sticks. Signal, lower than the moonlight, red hues, lost hues, snooze, lower than the brightness, torn hearts, crushed bodies, wheels slowly stopping, children hopping, forgotten shoes, red hues, carvings, bruised, abused. Signal, lower than the battery, torn pieces, private pieces, wheels stolen, empty spaces, traveling to distant places. Signal, dead, red hues, footprints, red hues, red tints. I've not seen you since. Snooze, error, deadly nightmares, sweet dreams, wheels replaced, new faces, forgotten identity, private life, carvings, red hues, abused. And poem.
All right.
Well, what do you think?
Now I'm trying to catch up. I had to have my little powwow. It's pretty interesting. It's got a lot of thoughts here that relate to the red hues. You know, trying to like catch up with all of them. Lost hues. Tom Hart's crushed body feels slowly stopping and hopping, forgetting Steve Red Hughes. Wow. The very, painful piece, actually. Let's see what it says here. Stitch with my right hand, childhood fading away. I still understand the happiness, right? No sleepless nights screaming for fight, all bundled by joy in those holy lights. Coronavirus. Love, family, friends, friendship. I know, you know, I mean, I'm looking here and I see, let's see, where would I begin with this? Signaled lower than the mood light. Torn fabrics, crushed bricks, wheels still rotating, broken sticks. You know, to me, I go right to lost because it just has such a vivid description of an accident or a crash in my mind. Red hues, lost hues, snooze, lower than the brightness. Torn hearts, crushed bodies, wheels slowly stopping, children hopping. Forgotten shoes, red hues, carvings, bruised, abused. It just takes me someplace that's very sad and very serious, you know. And it just goes on from there because it doesn't get any, you know, there's no pleasantries, you know, from there forward either. You know, in fact, it ends on the word abused. It's kind of rough. So I'm not sure, you know, how, you know, friends, family, friendship, coronavirus, romance, and love all fit into this piece because it seems really sad to me. But it was nicely written, Luke, and I want to thank you for sharing with us for sure. It's a tough call for me, kind of get a handle on it. But I'm always willing to hear what you have to say, Rex.
Well, you said an accent. I kind of went with the, based on the language, a train station, the signal, the red hues, the red lights, the wheels slowly stopping, and wheels stolen, and wheels still rotating. I had me thinking of an old-time train, something right around the 40s, 50s, right before they went into the diesel and electric modes. It gives it that kind of a notion of a whistle stop, so to speak. And everything kind of hits on that as well because it comes in broken moments, torn fabrics, crushed bricks, broken sticks, red hues, lost hues. There's that number, the red hues. Usually it is a moment for the stop for the train itself, but here it's kind of it hits on the notion of the red hues that are laid across the flesh. Then again, it rolls into torn hearts, crushed bodies, children hopping. But that kind of hits on the idea of, especially with the forgotten shoes, the rush to get ready for school or get ready to go out, and then red hues hits again, and then the bruise and abuse follow that. So, yeah, it does walk this angle of heartache and tragedy. And the traveling to different places, again, there's that idea again with the train stop, signal, dead, red news, footprint,
you know, like,
red news, dead. Huh?
Right. If you started to comment, I went on my look, and it was for a contest. And it was a horror fest contest. So I thought... When I thought about it, I thought, well, yeah, I guess it would fit into some kind of horror because it's such a tragic sounding piece, you know, bruises and abuse and I don't know, all that. And I went, yeah, okay, I can see that. So, but I thought I'd share that with you because what I see at the bottom didn't reflect anything with the horror fest. But, and I felt kind of awkward saying that, you know, I found it to be like a painful kind of piece. But I feel better now that I read that. I'm like, okay.
Well, no, you're right.
But a little better.
The bottom kind of opens up. It's on deadly nightmares and sweet dreams. Then offers up something more. Yeah. Wheels replaced. New faces. Forgotten identity. Private life. Carvings. Red hues.
Yeah.
Abuse. Well, there's still that intonation of that hardness. Yet there is an opening up, so to speak. Maybe a bit of breathing space. The sweet dreams. The new faces. The forgotten identity points to not looking back on that so it doesn't kind of work its way into the life that you're actually seeing now moving forward. And the private life points to the fact that it's not walking back into deliverance with what happened with back then or with the people who commanded that line of abuse.
Right, I'll go for that. I'll dig it. I can dig it. All good. I just feel I was feeling kind of far out there, man. Far out. Let me see what's happening. Who's here doing what? Anybody? I don't know. I don't see anybody following us. I don't think they like us tonight. So you read that one, so that puts me up next. So I guess I will read this one. Okay. The next piece I'm going to put up. Okay, the next one I'm going to put up is by Mamiya, and it's called Emancipation. Okay, on the eyeballs. Okay, light fingers bleed on steel strings, while bow frays catgut everywhere. Sweat trickles down a slick forehead, eyes closed, intent on the music. As it swells, thundering, heavy on the heart, mouthing the song. The pain festering, burrowing deep, hands shake, keeping control. to the music while chaos reigns, warring emotions of love and hate. Standing hollow, thorn in the side, waiting on a bed made of nails, hands tied, body bruised, lose or win, there is nothing. Heart squeezed by a cold hand, kneeling for reprieve that won't come. Myself spent like a gutted candle, melted and guttering about to die. Given too much, taken too little, overlooked for what I'm worth. So I pick myself for a change, come self-fellow, end poem.
Great reading. Thank you very much. Again, this one was from the two cellos contest as well, and this worked off the song With or Without You. And Manuel went with the two vignettes to kind of play out that theme. That first one was great in the thought of how it played out with, and then the back end walks in with that without angle, but they're separate, yet they're interwoven together, because the very last stanza itself, so I pick myself for a change, come self, follow. It kind of walks back into the notes up front. Little fingers bleed on steel strings while bow frays catgut everywhere. The note of even though it is with or without you, there's that note of stand on the back end to the point where you play your own music for a change instead of playing off the tune for someone else.
Absolutely. Okay. I think this was well, you know, I was like kind of like thinking for a minute. I think this was a really well done piece by Manya. You know, I like the fact that this went to the two cellos, because I kind of lost track that we still had those moving forward. And when she leads into this, it speaks right to the concept of that. You know, light fingers bleed on steel strings while bow frays catgut everywhere. You know, it speaks to the instrument, you know. And then she starts about the sweat trickles down a slick forehead, eyes closed and intent on music. Because there's no time to, like, really read music while you're doing that. You know what I mean? It doesn't happen that way. You like to think it does, but it doesn't. You know, you have to be, like, really super multitasking. But I think that it was just really wonderful. And then the last stanza, as you said, you know, so I pick myself for a change. Come self, follow. You know, it's just given too much, taken too little, overlooked for what I'm worth. You know, it's just a wonderful intro to the piece, you know, speaking directly to the music and nodding to the cello. I'll say it that way because it doesn't really specify. And then when you get down to the bottom, it does with or without you. You know, come on, you come with me or not. And I think, you know, Manya has a great way of wording things, and she makes it seem very, I don't know, her work is always very direct. It has a direction, and there's no denying that. You know, you can just stay with it and keep on going. And I always like that about her work. It's not something you have to kind of guess at. And, you know, that's admirable. So great job, Manya, and thanks for sharing with us. Now I have to, I'm stalling here. Let's help me out. I'm trying to finish typing them. Come on. Otherwise people think I just don't give a darn. Here we go. Okay. That was Manya. I'm going to find one for you. Okay.
There's a felon in the house.
Uh-oh. Call the cops. Oh, here she is.
Oh, I like that note there, Dad. Wicked smile.
I got my hands in the air. Hands are in the air. Frisk me, frisk me. Hey, guys.
How are you?
Great. I'm just hanging in there. Going pretty good. I thought I'd get a couple more shows in before next week, and I'll be out for a while again. So, but only to come and join you guys.
Gosh. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you did. It's always good to have you around.
Thank you.
Let me see what I'm doing. I forgot where the hell I was going. Just so quick. It's terrible. Oh,
I think you were going back to the board.
It was Rex's turn. Don't let him fool us. We know what it is. Okay, right.
Well, shut down.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Dan DeShino. Nice to see you in the room. And Rex, I'm going to put this one up by S Sharp for you.
All right.
Very good.
The Buffalo Hunt Spy, Scott Sharp. Warriors danced in ceremonial paints and headdresses around the campfire, beating buffalo skin drums, praying for wisdom and peace under the guidance of celestial gods. The birth of man and beast, like sun and earth, live lives that revolve around one another. Raised mount painted horses with reverence to the circle of life, buffalo bone tipped spears in hand, they ride through the knee-high golden grass in search of the powerful beast. Atop their horses, they ride, golden legs and chests, worshiping the sun god as the bison herd appears by the rim rock cliffs near the ravine. The herd, startled, begins a slow trot upstream as the warriors edge one bull away from the herd surrounding it. They come to a frantic stop. As the mammoth animal spins in a circle, dust surrounds the scene. The first spear is thrown, lodged in the shoulder. The beast screams, charging. The bull knocks a horse and rides to the ground, the first to die in nature's exchange, gorged by the horns of the godlike beast, the provider of all, glorifies the hunter upon these hallowed grounds. Another ivory-tipped rod penetrates the side of the great buffalo. Staggering, it cries out, scaring a flock of birds out of the prairie grass. Pepper got in the salted Montana sky. Snorting, the brute teeters, stumbling, crashing to the ground like thunder on a stormy night. Still squirming, the beast says its last prayers, taking its place in the great circle of life. Balance remains between earth, water, and sky. End poem. All right, well, why don't we start with you, darling?
For one, that was an excellent read, and this is an amazing piece. Great storytelling, for one, and it is basically given the spirituality and how the wisdom, not to mention the respect that you give to nature and the circle of life. I love the ending of where it states, balance remains between earth, water, and sky. You know, and they don't go out and hunt for something that they're not going to actually feast upon and use every ounce of that animal or that beast, but yet they still don't butcher it for the death of the person that it takes. The first person that it takes is another one of the warriors coming to hunt. They don't like just butcher it for the brutality, thinking, well, you killed our person. It was out of respect. They didn't go full on crazy on it, I guess. This is an amazing piece and great storytelling, and I'd like to see more from this person.
Nice, Bill. Thank you. All right, Eugene, what do you got?
Are you asking Eugene? You might as well forget it. He's never around. It's such a waste. But I think this was a wonderful story told by Scott, and an excellent format as well, because, you know, Scott does a lot of that story poem kind of thing, and his imagery was outstanding, and I really enjoyed the way he worded things and pulled it together in such a great fashion. And I want to say this, Scott, I'm sorry, I did not see the SoundCloud until after I gave it to Rex to read, so I'm sure you didn't mind too much, but I appreciate you, and I appreciate your SoundCloud always. But it, just an excellent piece and very well done. Now, at the bottom here, I do see it says The Buffalo Hunt Recess Carving by Fred Sharp. So I have to wonder if it's somebody related. I find that to be kind of interesting. It's a beautiful piece that the image thing. So I'll have to see if I can kind of surprise them and put it up there. But, yeah, so anyway, Scott, thank you so much. Excellent job. I'm sorry about that, Rex. I just meander on and yammer. My bad.
That's all right.
It's awful.
I like the ease this walks out, just like the, as he puts it here, the circle of life. It was always about the circle of life. You don't take more from the land than you need for that day or the next couple of days. You take everything in moderation for what it offers, like what comes from the earth, what comes from the rivers, and what is offered in the buffalo itself. It's on great thought, buffalo skin drums, the notes with buffalo bone-tipped spears in hand, the thoughts of riding through knee-high golden grass in search of powerful beasts, the thoughts of being the champions in riding horse. Then he hits on nice little touches, rim rock cliffs near the ravine, slopes rock upstream, sort of everything giving homage, not just the culture, but to nature itself, the thought to the godlike beast, the provider of all, glorifies the hunter upon these hallowed grounds. Nicely touched. And just like Fell said, everything gets everything that can be used, will be used, and what is left, I guess, it doesn't get buried. It's left out for the rest of the, you've got your vultures, you've got your all manner of wildlife that'll come along and pick at what little is left, because they'll take the hides, they'll take the sinews, they'll take anything and everything that they can use themselves. And it speaks for time when there used to be, they called it a buffalo herd back in the day. It stretched from Texas clear up to Montana and was wide across a half a dozen states and was something like 40 million strong in buffalo. And when that herd stampeded, so to speak, you heard that echoing from one end of the country to the other. It was so loud. Nicely done, Scott. Thank you very much.
All right. Yeah, Dan says Scott's got a new book coming out any day now. And,
good.
Yeah, I think he was on the show, not this week, last week, in the book and his poetry. And thanks for reminding us, absolutely. Excellent work, Scott. Nice stuff. He does wonderful stories that he tells. He has quite a few I've read that I thought were really outstanding. So that's always wonderful. Okay. Well, Felon, I now have one for you.
So, oh, boy. Okay,
put it
all
up.
Right.
This is by Passion Promise. So whenever you're
Passion's
ready.
Promise? Passion's Promise. Yes. It's called Springtime Sonnet. Spring slipped away, that of winter's ice days, and daisies sprouted their petals again. Within the mist of rain, newest growth strayed from the fields to yards, from here to round the bend. Soft wings of butterflies are now growing, dancing freely amongst the wind. Caress, roses will change colors without knowing, while beneath the sunshine they will undress. The rain flows in, and the sunflowers weep, the vibrant of colors when the storm passes. In the wooden box, the petals I keep of memories cherished of days long past. From the rocker, I watch as spring settles in and wish to have you beside me again. End poem.
Great read, Belle. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, you get to dabble up front.
You know, I thought this was a really nice piece. I love the imagery of springtime, you know, that she walks through. And literally walks through, because you kind of feel like you're in a space where you're walking through the flowers in the garden. Soft wings of butterflies are now growing, dancing freely amongst the wind's caress. Roses will change colors without knowing, while beneath the sunshine they will undress. Just lovely imagery, nice stanzas throughout, and I think she really, you know, did a wonderful job with the sonnet itself. So nice work, and thank you so much, Passion. Great job.
Thank you, Jean. All right, Bill, you got to read this. How about you?
Oh, this is absolutely stunning work. It's lightly written and airy, and it's just to me, I wouldn't say that it's more whimsical, but more of just nature, just, you know, Mother Nature at letting her hair down and letting the wind blow through her strands. This is what that reminds me of, and from the rocker, I watch spring settle as spring settles in, and wish to have you beside me again. And I don't know if I don't think that's really directed towards someone directly. I think it's just that moment, that season, for what it brings. And she knows it's things shall pass. So it's just a beautiful, nicely written poem or sonnet.
Nice catch, that Delma. I agree with you on that. There's a nice ease in this piece because. It hits on that note from a watch, from Rock Eye Watch as spring settles in, and that comes from everything from the first three stanzas, the notice. It's when you've got that little time of ease, you can actually sit back and watch the soft wings of butterflies growing, the roses as they change colors. And I like that thought, while beneath the sunshine they will undress. Nice touch to the rose actually blooming in the moment. And the mist of rain letting loose its notes to that which will come. And rain flows in and sunflowers weep, but vibrant the colors when the storm passed. In a wooden box, the petals in a heap of memories cherished of days long past. Again, that note to specialness in the moments of days long past, keeping those little touches of nature to remind one of a special moment in time. Thanks for that. All right, Jean, we're coming back to you.
Okay. All right. That brings me back to you, and I'm going to put this one up called Last Portrait by Cedar Chapman. Whenever you're ready.
Last Portrait by Cedar Chapman. If your ask of me is time, then I shall wait for you until a thousand suns have passed and my knees bleed kneeling on your cobblestone streets. Grant me this one last night to trace the lines from your shoulder to your toes. My fingers a fine sable brush that gently strokes your body inch by inch. Let your face be mine to touch, so we may merge our bodies as majestic stellar ribbons of magenta and mauve, dancing the Argentine tango under the Aureolan crescent moon. Together we shall paint our last portrait as your satin hair wisps over your porcelain canvas, blending romance rouge and Aegean sand to an elixir of ravenous colors. Your eyes will beckon to nip the nape of your neck with soft bristle kisses as I slowly caress you with my lips along the small of your back until you reach your last and final breath and plead for the crescendo of our timeless masterpiece. It is then, and only then, will I leave those stony steps and forever be washed away like old brushes fading to nothing but a distant memory hanging on your wall. End poem. Woo-hoo. All right, Belle, what do you think? Belle, are you muted?
Belle and Rob.
Oh,
no, she dropped.
Boy, that was great. Okay,
yes.
What about you?
We can call that a hit and run. I thought this was it was an excellent poem based on the contest that he entered. It's called A Beautiful Love Contest, but he said it was Happy Valentine's Day. I know it's a corporate made-up holiday, but at least it gives us a reason to write him a romantic poem. And I think he accomplished that very well in here. I love that the image that he chose to add to the piece, because I think that it gives you that brushstroke kind of feeling. It's an old painting. It's you know, and his right is a piece of art in itself, you know, because I think he hits the descriptions well. You know, his sable brush and gentle strokes. You know, great thoughts throughout, and I think he nailed it with imagery based on that. Just really, yeah, well done. Very well done. Thank you very much, Cedar Chapman. Mm-hmm.
This was a great piece, and I like that picture and how he's referenced that picture as a standalone piece that evokes such mm-hmm. thoughts. The first stanza itself kind of hits on a note of getting lost in the moment within that picture itself. And then from then on down, he rolls into that note of actually creating the picture. My fingers are fine table brush that gently strokes your body inch by inch. Let your face be mine to touch, yes. So we merge our bodies as majestic stellar ribbons of magenta and mauve. What a great thought there. Then dropping in the Argentine tango and my unceremonious, all of a sudden I can't pronounce aureole and damn. And let's say and still rolls down that thought. We shall paint our last portrait, satin hair wisp, porcelain canvas, blending romance rouge and Aegean sand to an elixir of ravenous colors. Great thoughts there. And soft bristle kisses. The touch of that soft touch of the brush itself, the canvas. Nicely done there. And again, the back end points again right back to the top. He's already finished his masterpiece, and it is then and only then will I leave these stony steps and forever be washed away like old brushes leading to nothing but a distant memory hanging on your wall. A quiet note of remembrance after having created that masterpiece to then leave it with the woman herself and pass on into history.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was an excellent piece.
That one.
Yeah, I enjoyed it very much. I loved the art angle of it, and I really did. I just thought he did a wonderful job. Okay, now the next one I'm going to put up is by EJ Cool called Sleeping Dragon, and I have an audio for that one. Oh, and we have another caller. Let's see who's here. Hello, 701. Who's calling, please?
Hey, it's Casey. How are you guys?
Casey.
Hey, Casey, doing?
How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing really good. I got my work done, so I can play now.
Nice.
That's the way. Yeah, that's the way. Well, I'll tell you what. Let me put this one on by EJ Cool, and we'll just keep on rolling. So here we go. This one is called Sleeping Dragon.
Sleeping Dragons by EJ Cool. On smoky mountain shoulders rest dragons of lapis feathered crest, dozing in winter doldrums nest, iridescent scales breathe abreast. December sun sharply reflects upon the abalone flex, glittering opal mist collects, mirrored by crystal blizzard vexed. Bleeding heart and bloodroot bouquets, trout lily and trillium sprays, speckled through vernal meadow haze where solitary giants laze. Melting snow quenches marl and loam, wakens each hibernal rhizome and frozen warren catacomb, dripping with frigid monochrome. The quest proof of brooding repose from cobalt-plated embryos as summer swelter crescendos, alpha omega juxtapose. In autumn fire, wyvern wings fledge beyond the looming limestone ledge, or pillowed fog and soggy sedge to hide behind sky's silver edge.
Great read, EJ. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Casey, why don't we start with you, please? What did you think of Sleeping Dragons?
Well, first I have to say the obvious most awesome part about this poem is just the flow is fantastic. You did a really great job creating that flow throughout our poem, and the rhyme is done really well. It's not, you know, she has a lot of great words in it. It's not cheesy. You know, sometimes when you have a poem that's complete rhyme, some of the words are like ice and mice, you know. But, no, her words are intelligent. It was eloquently written. I loved that she did something about dragons. I think that's really cool because you can really use your imagination to form these images, and she does. She does that so well. I thought the imagery was beautiful. My favorite part of the poem was the bequest proof of brooding repose from cobalt-plated embryos as summer swelter crescendos, alpha omega juxtapose. I think that was just a really stark part of the poem, and I thought it was really interesting how she chose to word that and how she made the image. That's it's just vivid. She used really good vivid words. So I thought it was great.
Excellent. Thank you, Casey. All right, Jean, how about you?
Yeah, I like this piece a lot. I like the I liked how she entered into the piece, you know. But then December sun sharply reflects upon the abalone fleck, glittering opal mist collect, mirrored by a crystal blizzard vex. I love that the abalone and the opal reference is here because it gives you that glistening feel of winter. But then she starts in bleeding heart and bloodroot bouquets. Bleeding hearts are some of the first flowers to actually pop in the spring, at least as far as I know. You know, it's not all of them, but it's some of them. And the bloodroot bouquets, trout lily and trillium spray, speckled through vernal meadow haze, were solitary giant slaves. And now she's almost walking into fall, but I love the flower references in that stanza. I think that was really pretty neat, you know. And then it's talking about the rhizomes, you know, awakens each hibernal rhizome and frozen warren catacomb, dripping with frigid monochrome. You know, I don't know, I think it's great. I love the imagery, I love the flower references, and I definitely think she did an excellent job with her rhyme and metering that. Just really, really nicely done. So, thank you very much, DJ.
Great comments, you two. I got to hit on the easiest thing for me was the mono rhyme that she's got rolling through each stanza, a singularity to each one all by itself without a repeat thought going down, which was done well, adding a touch of almost magic to the piece because of what she's taken up as as her thoughts. But also that which she's got in here, the language itself, lapis feathered crest, abalone flex, glittering opal mist, crystal blizzard vex. I too thought the bloodroot bouquets was a nice touch, as well as the trout lily and trillium sprays, and thoughts like vernal meadow and marl and loam, hibernal. What else we got here? The cobalt plated embryos. That was a nice touch coming down the back end, but the finish with the fledge, ledge, sledge, and edge was a nice touch. The looming limestone ledge, the fog and soggy sedge, running back in on itself to hide behind sky's silver edge. Great finish, and I do like the thought with the sleeping dragons there, EJ. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, it's back to you.
Well, Casey must have been watching the board with me because she showed up just in time because the next piece up is hers. So here we go, Casey, whenever you're ready.
Oh, boy. I'm actually a little nervous to read it because it's been a little bit since I've actually read it. But here we go.
Your sizzling tongue slips. Taste the black tar on my lips. Everything is moving in motion with my hips. We hold our mouths to the sky while the big dripper drips. We're in the forbidden land, the night when nobody sleeps. You and me, it's a midsummer's eve and we're dreaming. We fly inside my head and land somewhere between sacrifice and white lace. Such a holy place, under temptation and starlight, we grace the sky just to fall back down. 2 steps to the edge of a blaze and you hold me just close enough to hear my heart beat. Through the ashes, I'm in the air that surrounds the sound of your feet on the ground. Can you feel me now? Do you feel me now? Sleep takes you to a new extreme. I remain in the dream, just a drop of blood gliding off the edge of steel into conscious stream.
Great read there, Casey. Thank you very much. All right, Jane, what do you think?
Well, I say it's a great job, Casey, as always. I mean, your work is always, you know, I don't know, on the money. I guess that's one way to put it. You know, the first stanza, I love that, you know, the intro. You know, through sizzling lizard tongues we slip, taste the black hair, a tar on my lips. Everything is moving in motion with my hips. We hold our mouths to the sky while the big dripper drips, you know. And, yeah, the next one is just as good. I mean, they're all very well done. I like how you broke it up so that way it slows their pace down between such a holy place under temptation and starlight. We grace the sky just to fall back down. You know, it's clever. It's well done. It's well written. You know, you take control of the read and you have everyone reading just the way you want them to. And I think that was just well done. So nice work, Casey. Thanks for sharing with us.
Thank you.
Well, you had me with the title, Sizzling Lizards, and the opening line, well, actually the opening first two lines, through sizzling lizard tongues we slip, taste the black tar on my lips. And then again, opening up the second, we're in the forbidden land, the night when nobody sleeps. 2 step to the edge of a blaze, and you hold me just close enough to hear my heart beat. If I didn't know any better, I'd say you rolled off the thought of Morrison with this. But I don't think you did, really. But you actually captured that thought of way Morrison wrote his thoughts down in that type of language, the forbidden land, sacrifice and white lace, a holy place under temptation, that thought with the 2 step, the edge of a blade. And then the finish, sleep takes it to the new extreme. I remain in the dream, just a drop of blood gliding off the edge of steel into conscious stream. A nice finish.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Okie dokie.
All right, Jane.
Okay. The next one I'm going to put up is by Weaver of Dreams. And we have an audio for this. So let me put it up. It's called A Shocking Discovery by Weaver of Dreams. And here we go. Now that's if I can figure out where I am. Okay, here we go.
Sleepwalk by E.J. Cool. Artificial Intelligence.
Not the one.
All right, where's that one?
Wow. What did I do? Oh, I know exactly what I do. I know. I remember now. Okay, well, let's try another one. See if I can screw up two in a row. This is called Bitter Storm by Mr. M. So let me drop that in the room, and I'm going to go fix the other one. And yes. Here we go.
And
this is my recital of Bitter Storm. Over the horizon, have seen many a sunrise, and in turn, many dawns have lain to rest. And yet, these days, the light has been blotted out by the ever-growing blizzard that seems to linger as a baleful omen of what is to come. As time passes, the storm had grown enough to consume my little world. I've come to know nothing of tenderness or warmth. Kindled dreams could not muster a flicker. Seems incandescence is of the highest form of sacrilege here. After decades of being subjected to the ruthless cold, I have become akin to it. In my solitude, I noticed a child outside. He was desperately seeking shelter from the endless barrage of numbing frigidity. Yet, I could not help him. There was nothing I could do. I watched as he struggled in vain, trying to escape winter's unforgiving onslaught, but to no avail. If I still held pity, I would pity him. If I could still feel guilt, I surely would have. Yet, as he lay there, with the light of life leaving his body, I recognized the piercing similarity. This child is as I was, abandoned in the frigid abyss with no help from the heartless voyeurs that looked on, draped in stoicism. My last bit of remorse beckoned that I not let him in, for within me it is now far colder than any storm.
Great read, Miss M. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Casey, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, sure. So, Mr. M., I like a lot of his work because he has sort of this, like, dark, broody way about his poetry that it kind of melts you into what he's thinking. It melts you into his mind a lot of times in the poem. It's just like internal dialogue of most. What's really interesting about this poem, there's a couple things that I noticed, but one is that he's a fantastic storyteller, and he uses I don't know if it's on purpose. A part of me would think that it was purposeful because it's very well done. But he uses, and it's funny because you guys have the show called Art of Seduction, but he uses seduction in his writing. And I don't know if you guys know a ton about the actual psychological art of seduction. but essentially what you do to seduce somebody into doing something is the art of seduction. And it's a tactic that's used sometimes in spies and things like that. But what you do is you create a story and you make them believe it, and they want the story so bad that they forget about the other things and they're not paying attention to reality. It takes them away from their current reality, and that's how you seduce someone. You just make it so enticing. So you don't, you know, anyway, that's a whole other tangent. But what I'm saying is, in this poem, there's a lot of that sort of brain seduction going on. He's leading you into this place, and it's very dark and scary and, like, sad, but it's very, like, it's seducing language. And then when you get into it, he sees this child, which you would think is probably his younger self that he's looking at, and it's sort of a memory or a reflection, and that he's keeping him away from himself. So that says a lot about the writer. So this sounds kind of like a biography a little bit, or like a piece of an autobiography that is like poetic. It's really interesting, and yeah. So that's what I got from it. Sorry for the long comment.
Excellent. Great comment, because I'm right on the same page with you, because that opening the first two stanzas with the small two-line finish to it kind of hits on the bleak arena that he's in at this point in time. And then the notice, the thought with the child, like you said, it's his younger self that was at one time had a sense of light, had a sense of maybe even a gaiety within, which he does not have at this point in time. And the frigidity, the depth of what came across turned him cold and still held pity. I would pity him. That is that essence of almost a touch of forgiveness, but there is that notice of letting it pass in the moment, because you can't grasp onto that and still harbor and hold on to that bitterness that still sits within because of what occurred in the upper hand. So you're absolutely right, Casey. My thoughts exactly. And Dean, how about you?
Well, you know, I like Robert's work always, and I found this to be a painful piece. You know, I am looking forward to part two. I'm not sure if he's written it yet. It's been a while. He's had plenty of time. I have to talk to him about this. But, you know, I agree. You know, he leads this story exactly where he wants you to see it. He does it in a wonderful way that, you know, does draw you in and kind of walk you along the path he wants you to go. And I think that he has a wonderful way of doing that in all of his work. And I've always admired that in him, because, you know, you read it and it just, you can't help but kind of feel it, you know, or be involved in the piece in some way, shape, or form. And I think that shows a great skill in writing. But excellent job, Robert. And thank you, as always, for sharing with us. You know, I enjoyed hearing your pieces. So great job. Okay, and I think I fixed our problem. Well, my problem. You know. I kind of mixed two pieces up earlier, and I knew it. Oh God, I don't know what I did, but I thought I added them, and I knew I did something wrong, and I deleted them, and I redid them again, and apparently I did it wrong the second time. So hopefully this one, I don't know. It makes me laugh. But yes. So we're going to try Weaver of Dreams again and see if I can't get it to play Weaver of Dreams in her. I don't know. It's amazing. And here we go.
Darkness hides me from what I know is out there. I filter out the usual night noises. Listening again for that sound. I'm sure I heard it seconds ago. The sound of metal grating on rock. Which makes me think of how much danger I'd be in if found. I must stop thinking of sharp silver slicing through vampiric flesh. I have to move. I know my fairy scent, irresistible and intoxicating, is being carried on the breeze, through the trees, fluttering the leaves, enticing harbingers of death, who find my pheromones so stimulating. I make a shocking discovery. God, I'm on a high branch and not below, as figures move beneath my hiding place. I can barely see their shapes, made of the blackest shadows. I shudder, thinking of that cold, clammy miasma covering my face. The bite of vampires moves on, but before I can relax, I feel the air behind me shift. I know he's found me. A voice like liquid velvet whispers, "You should have flitted away. My chaps are hell-bent on a biting, sipping spree." I curse myself for being in the clutches of this creature whose thousand-year-old lifespan has honed his skills. I whisper back, letting my hatred show, "You had best be quick if you plan to make me another of your many cowardly kills." The vampire is amused. He relaxes, turns me round. That's all I need. My dagger strikes. The silver blade enters his heart, destroys it with that single blow. Now all the vampires she's made will become unmade.
Great read, Weaver. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Jean, since you had to go fix this three times, you get first look since you've had three rings.
Go ahead, rub it in. Go ahead, rub it in. Go ahead. You know, Weaver has such a wonderful way with her dark rates. She really does. And her voice is so excellent for reading them. So between those two, it's kind of like Frank. Frank and the dark rate kind of go hand in hand. You know, Weaver definitely has the same talent in that respect. Just, you know, she kind of whispers the story and kind of builds up that kind of thought, you know, in your mind, like, oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. But I love how she ended this one. You know, I curse myself for being in the clutches of this creature whose 1,000-year-old lifespan has honed his skills. I whisper back, letting my hatred show. You had best be quick if you plan to make me another of your many cowardly kills. And, you know, to turn it around in the end, because she knows I like a good twist. You know, the vampire is amused. He relaxes, turns me around. That's all I need. My dagger strikes. The silver blade enters his heart and destroys it with a single blow. Now all the vampires he's made will become unmade. You know, great... just a great turn of events there, you know. You know, she got the upper hand and took over, and that was it. You know, I think she did an excellent job writing this. It's always got just enough meat to it. I like it. So,
absolutely.
Thank you.
Nice, Jean. Mm-hmm. Stacey, how about you?
I was really impressed with this. I think that she should write some... stories, like short stories, would be really cool to see from her. It just continually surprised me throughout the entire thing. And it was exhilarated at the beginning, that darkness hides me from what I know is out there. That is such a stark and interesting way to start it, because now you're wondering, okay, what's going on? What is she hiding from? And then you get to the second stanza, and you find out that she's a fairy, you know, or maybe it was, yeah. But you find out she's a fairy, and that's a really interesting thought, because this is kind of not a fairy tale. It's very interesting that she's got this dark side to fairies, right? And that a vampire would be after a fairy, which makes a lot of sense if you think about it. Why wouldn't they? But it's just really interesting. She did a great job. And then throughout, I was just continually surprised. So I'm surprised she's a fairy. I'm interested in what's going on here. She's caught. And the moral of the entire poem is that she is courage and triumph, and that this fairy kills them, but it's more than just killing the thing that was after her. It's now all the vampires he's made will be made. That is so powerful. And it's showing that there's so much power in this fairy, who is, I'm assuming, a woman, which is just an interesting perspective, and there's a lot of messages in here that are thrown in. I really liked it. I would love to see some short stories from her, because I think that it would just be fantastic.
Excellent. Well said there, Casey. Thank you. I'll agree with you. There is a note to kind of a Grimm's fairy tale. You think of fairies, you might think of the little children, those stories that get told. Don't you go out in the woods at night. Things are bad out there. Yeah, and but it also, you hit on that note of this doesn't come across as a fairy tale, so to speak. But I thought of, well, there used to be a cartoon out years ago. It was called Fractured Fairy Tales. And it's kind of, it's on that note, a fractured fairy tale. And I too thought the note of adding in herself as a fairy was something different, because being vampires in that moment. You're not that wee little thing that's about 6 inches tall. You're a full-size fairy, which means you meet the needs of that vampire, so to speak, as far as what can be drawn from you. And two, the thoughts of the whispering, especially a little quieter in certain spots, added to the almost manic desperation in the moment until that last stanza walks itself up. Because even though there is that mention of that in that second stanza, I would stop thinking of sharp silver slicing through vampiric flesh. There is that almost a Red Riding Hood and the Wolf moment right there. And yet she turns around and does that Red Riding Hood and the Wolf moment in the back end, dispatching the vampire and all of those that were made by him. So you're right. This does have a moral story to it. You best be careful of what you're hunting. Know what you're hunting. And always be on sharp call. Thank you, Weaver. All right, Jane. We're back to you.
Okie dokie. Let me see now. I had something lined up. Yes, I did. Okay. Okay. For my next magic trick, I'm going to read a piece by Jack Blue called A Dog's Ballad in One. I don't know what the hell I was trying to say. It wasn't working. So, here we go. A Dog's Ballad Number One by Jack Blue. As she was a humble girl, whining like a noble pearl in her dusty, shabby dress, she just cleared up the mess. Every day a sparrow came, but he was no soul to tame. While her sister swept away all day long like dolls of clay, making Ashy work around, but complained and frowned. They complained and frowned, like they'd been in fairyland with demons hand in hand. People held a royal feast for every man and beast, so the gaudy sisters ran for the prince's love to fan. Ashy had to labor home, as mice were brave to roam. Let her have a noble dress, so magically we can guess. A yellow sparrow sang with this pleasant gang. She became a princess now, and no one could imagine how. In the castle she was bright and admired fairy's flight. Her newborn majesty gave the prince a galaxy of merry ashy avatars playing someone's stars. Our sorry sisters stood on stage, but not for good. They reportedly became witches for another game. Happiness is just afloat on our storyteller's boat. And fun.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. This was a lot longer than most of Jack's pieces, and I like the thought with the Cinderella molded into a touch of Shakespeare with the back end. The sorry sisters stood on stage, but not for good. They reportedly became witches for another game. Kind of hits me with that the witches around the cauldron, bubble, bubble, toil and trouble, cauldron, boiling, cauldron, bubble. And the note with the, a yellow sparrow sang with his pleasant gang had me thinking of some Disney cartoons or movie cartoons with the birds that sing about in happiness and glee. So this walked a couple of tones of different things to play with. Nicely done, Jack. And Casey, how about you?
Oh, gosh, I have a lot of thoughts about this. So, A Dog's Ballad Number One. So, while she was reading through this, I was thinking, this is about a dog, and it's like a dog Cinderella story. And that's really kind of an interesting mix. But then I went back and read it again, and I said, what if he's the writer, is the dog, and just writing from his perspective? That's a whole different way to look at it. But it almost made more sense to me that way. Personally, maybe because I don't put dogs in dresses, and I think that threw me off. But thinking of the writer as the dog, and actually as an actual person, made a lot more sense to me. I thought that was a really interesting way to look at it. I don't think that was the intention, but I thought it was really cool. And I think it's a really interesting and fun poem because you can look at it in so many different ways. It's opened up the angles, and it's kind of changed up the Cinderella story enough to kind of have fun with it again. You know, it gets rid of that. Everybody knows the Cinderella story, you know, but when you mix it up and you change it and you add a new perspective to it, it makes it fun again. So I thought it was really interesting, and it was fun.
Well, absolutely. Great comment there, Casey. Thank you. All right, Eugene, it's your turn.
I heard that. Just so you know. I thought this was a well-penned piece by Luke. I know he likes to put a twist on things, and I'm usually with you right there about the Shakespeare kind of angle on things. I didn't quite get that out of this one, but that's, you know, it's just me. And probably because I was reading it, and I probably didn't read it exactly like I should have in my head. But I thought it was a nice take on the Cinderella tale, and I thought it was clever work, and it was intriguing because it made me stop and think because, you know, Cinderella, of course, you know, turns into a different little bit of a tale here near the end because her newborn majesty gave the prince a galaxy. That's somewhere past the Cinderella story. So I'm not exactly sure. He just embellished it more at the end. And so I think it was clever, and I thought it was intriguing, you know, the direction he took it. So nicely done. Okay. Now, where am I? Here I am. Yeah, I know. I'm not well. Okay, Rex, I got another for you.
Uh-oh.
Put it up. And.
Oh, yes. I saw this up there earlier. Cool. All right. I like this one. Special report. Popeye the Sailor Man indicted on drug charges. Special report. Popeye the Sailor Man has been indicted on drug charges in an undercover report where we found a snitch, a certain Mr. Brutus the Bully. He reported that Popeye was a tweaker from early on. As a young lad, he would often smoke a bowl of, quote, spinach, and get immediate scoop of strength, and his boil, olive oil, was often anorexic because of the large amounts of spinach that they would consume. In an all-tell interview with the whistleblower Brutus, the Bully, wherein Brutus sat down with Al Jubal de la Chingjor Jr. III, he said that it did not matter that Popeye was a wimp the rest of the time when he has no spinach. A certain Mr. Wimpy was quoted as saying, "Popeye is a tweaker to the max now. I would gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. We will keep you updated." And that's our show for today. Good night, everybody, and farewell. End call.
See? Oh, my God.
you got that one up front. Lawrence is always great for some laughs and a little bit of oddity here and there, playing off the cuff with things. And this was a fun piece. Taking it in another direction. I like that. All right, Gene, I heard you laughing. What'd you think?
In the beginning of the thing, you started me chuckling. You know, I can't help it. It just hit me funny. And it fit. I thought it was really a funny piece. And it was things I never knew about Popeye. You know, go figure. And olive oil. What the hell? I wonder if she was so damn skinny. But definitely, it was a comical piece. And, you know, I have to thank Lawrence for putting it in for tonight because it was humorous, pretty humorous. I liked it. That darn Popeye smoking all that spinach.
Thank you, Jean. All right, Casey, how about you?
I thought this was fantastic. I loved the imaginativeness of it. I don't know if that's even a word, but the imagination and creativity that went into it is just phenomenal. I think one of my favorite things about poetry is that it's so freeing for a writer. So something like this can happen. You know, everywhere else there's so many rules, but poetry allows you to kind of just bloop, put any sort of expression on the page and it's poetry. And I absolutely love that, because like where else would you see something like this? So it's just absolutely creative, totally original. It's something that you wouldn't see anywhere else. And I actually went ahead and pinned it to my profile. I just love it.
Excellent. Lauren always does funny pieces for the, whether it's for Sunday's Rhythm and Rhyme, or he'd even drop in After Midnight pieces. And he pops me in there, and he pops Pam in there, and he'll pop other people in there as a touch to the humor, as the fact that he's having fun with what he's doing and delivering. So, again, Lawrence, wonderful piece. Had a blast with it. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right.
I thought that was one of the shortest pieces I've ever seen by Lawrence. But it was good. Okay. Casey, I have another one for you, please. And this is by Sapphire Rose, called Dispersing the Dark for Light.
Okay. I hope I do it justice. I really enjoy a lot of Sapphire's work.
Okay.
Dispersing Dark for Light by Sapphire Rose. Each Deja lacked clarity, an outcast from day one, viewing the world from different eyes. I surmise it is because my ideologies never aligned with yours. Darkness has been a place of unyielding comfort. It never yells or scolds. Sadly for me, it is the encompassment of a warm spring day. My senses are now aware of this new reality, like cracks in an old porcelain vase. I am more broken than before. Even Satan himself cannot offer redemption, not this time around. I stand with my back turned, not against the dream, but against the altered reality, evaporating the dark in favor of the light. In the end, the strongest are the ones who suffer the most. End poem.
Great read, Casey. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, what'd you think?
It was a great piece. Sapphire has a wonderful way of writing. This one here, I am more broken than before. Even Satan himself cannot offer redemption, not this time around. I stand with my back turned, not against the dream, but against the altered reality, evaporating the dark in favor of the light. In the end, the strongest are the ones who suffer the most. Now, they say what doesn't kill us makes us strong. That's what they say. And I think that she kind of brought that forward in this. Just nicely done. Nicely written, and very well expressed. So great job, and thank you, Sapphire Rose.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jean. Casey, you got to read it. How about you?
It's very revealing of the writer. It's a deep poem. It's really interesting. I think, in my perspective, it's about when something happens to you, a trauma or, whatever you want to call it, happens to you, and it changes the way you view the world in a way that you can no longer connect to people around you because now you see things differently. And it doesn't necessarily mean that's a bad thing. It makes you more intelligent in some ways, but sometimes you get to this level where you're seeing the world in a new way, and when you can't connect to any of the people around you because of that, it's a lonely place. And it sounds like that's where the writer was. You know, it's like almost like a warm spring day, as she says here. It's like she is more aware of the fact that she doesn't get to feel the sun on her skin anymore because she knows something that she wishes she didn't. Kind of that ignorance of this thing, and you can no longer bathe in ignorance once you have the knowledge. You know, you have to live with that. So at the end, when she talks about the strongest are the ones who suffer the most, it's kind of like when you think about knowledge is power, but the more knowledge you have, the more responsibility you have as well. And it's kind of, it's lonely at the top kind of thing. The stronger that you become and the more that you know and the more that you can really understand in life, a lot of times it's the lonelier you become. And so that's what I'm seeing in this film.
Excellent. I like that. I'm going to go with the, I like the thought, dispersed in the dark for light. Yet between this holds in two sections, spring day ending the first section, and then my senses opening up the second section. And the thought of each day's view lacks clarity. Kind of hits on that notion of, I've been here before, yet it doesn't make sense in the moment. And then that sort of, I surmise it's because my ideologies never align with yours. So that there is that note of being on the outside looking in, so to speak. And then darkness has been a place of unyielding comfort. It never yells or scolds. Sandy, for me, it is the encompassment of a warm spring day, that note of almost being swathed in the blanket, so to speak. Now, the second half, the new reality, like cracks in old porcelain vase, suddenly things are birthed anew. There's a metamorphosis going on. Even though there is that note to, I am more broken than before, that is because there's something going on that's not fully understood in the moment. And then stands with her back against, back turned, not against the dream, but against the altered reality. So there's the turning point, that metamorphosis, breaking out of the cocoon, so to speak. And in this, the cocoon is the evaporating dark, and that light creeping in to see that which is on the outside, which you are now fully encased in, a new beginning. And that thought to the end, the strongest are the ones who suffer the most. Yes. When you think there is nothing else left and everybody else has turned their back on you, you are the one that suffers in the moment until you get that note of clarity, which she offers up as that last word in the first stanza. Then all of a sudden, things turn around on their heels, so to speak, and they offer you a new twist, a new thought to that which is you, as opposed to that which you viewed yourself as. Nicely done, Sapphire. Thank you. All right, Jean, we're back on you.
Big comments, guys. Okay, the next one I'm going to put up is by Darkened Auras, and it's called Guilty Eyes. And I have an audio for that. So, here we go.
Sleepwalk by E.J. Cool. Artificial intelligence simulating psych.
Wow. What the hell?
I thought I heard that one earlier, too.
Oh, my God. That's too crazy. Okay, well, on that note, wow. That is too crazy. I do this all the time, right? Today, I've screwed up everything I've touched, it seems. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, Rex. I'm going to put a piece up for you to read again while I go and fix my problems.
No problem. Pilgrimage by Daniel Descino. I walk the earth as a confused and tortured monk. Too much for such an infant mind. Nowhere yet have I found to stop. And the mountains I cross build my strength and reveal the surrounding future. The oceans I swim cool and support. The deserts dry and lifeless provide shelter under the reflecting sand. and the ever-changing woodlands, a home I have long since forgotten, and I walk. The trees bear fruit, beckoning with floral fragrance and rainbow delight, and I feast, and I walk. To the earth I drop the spoiled remains, to walk again, through the nights, among the days, countless as the stars that guide, to return to where I wanted to dine and feast on the fruit once more. And Casey, what'd you think?
Yeah, I always love Daniel's work. It always is somewhat personal to him, but this was pretty creative. And it makes sense to me. So I looked down to see what he had in his author's notes, and it was for a Chinansky, not sure if I'm saying that right, but contest, which means, to me, it means it implies a lot of, what is the word now? My words are escaping me, but like abstractness.
Right.
So as I'm looking through this, it's really interesting because he's telling the story of this monk, but he's also telling the story of life in the circle of life. And it's about harvest, which I find really interesting that from the concept of harvest, he created this life cycle and it just kind of brings like a deeper understanding of such a simple concept, right? Because when you think of harvest, generally, you probably think of like picking fruit and things like that, but you don't think of like everything that actually goes into it. And this telling the story of a human and how that affects the plant, it's just kind of, it's connecting. It's I don't know how to put that, but it connects the dots, you know. It's really interesting.
Oh, I like that. Thank you, Casey. I too kind of hit on that a bit. That thought with the, where is it? I feast, then I walk, to earth I drop, spoil remains, to walk again. It hits me with the thought of the journey of life itself, because on the return, that spoiled remains now have returned once more to a blossoming tree. That which was left behind as a spoiled remains has re-earthed itself, re-rooted, grown. And it hits on that notion of life's struggle, the walk through life itself, those troubles, those travails we go through. And yet there's always something that one comes to or returns to, that notion of to return to where I once did dine and feast on the fruit once more. That can hit on the note of not just the fruit itself, but the life one left behind. You come home to actually die within that realm that you once left. As a child, you walk out and you are the tortured, confused and tortured monk, so to speak. Too much for such an infant mind. You hit the note of a teenager on their own for the first time, and there's the struggles that you go through all the way through life. Yet at the end, you return to that place where once you came, and to dine once more within that valley of life before offering yourself up in that note of death. Jean, are you there?
I am. You know, it's hard to get through all these days. I had to go fix what that girl did all afternoon. She's such a mess. I'm telling you, it's hard to get through all these days. Yes.
Well,
yes.
I told you not to let Eugene loose.
Oh, my God. See what happens when I do? I count on him, and look what happens. It all falls apart. It's terrible. It's terrible. Anyway, and I just lost the piece that we were talking about. Oh, my God. I thought this was a wonderful write by Daniel. Yeah, life itself is a pilgrimage, and we all take it. It's all about the way that we handle it and the way we perceive it and the way that we meet it, you know. pilgrimage is such a wonderful word. you know, and it's used in so many different, you know, religions and cultures and what have you. But I think life in general is just the pilgrimage, and I think that he did a great job expressing that, you know, in this piece. So excellent job, Daniel, and thank you so much, as always, for sharing your work. Mm-hmm. That's what I say.
Kirby.
It's my story.
So, where would you like to go next?
I don't know. I thought I knew where I was going last time. I'm going to try Darkened Auras again. That might be a really good idea.
Okay.
And, let me put that. And I'm going to try. I have an audio for this, I think. I scare myself, I tell you. I really do. Where is it now? There it is. I see it. Okay. Wow. Okay, here we go.
Guilty eye. The candles cast a dimming glow upon the window reflections show. Her guilt-filled eyes judge her foe. It's after midnight. Will she go? Another man awaits her arrival, someone to give her love life revival. But she is married to an older man whose death has not gone to her plan. Rain is pouring and pounding against the glass. The fear within her soon will pass. As lightning strikes, she starts to flee. She only wanted to be free. The silhouette begins to plea. Please don't leave me. Call help for me. A knife protruding from his chest, with her prints to cause her own arrest. Her money's gone, her honey too, and soon her looks will fade. She felt trapped inside a marriage, now prison's the home she made.
Great read there, Dark and Doris. Thank you for SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And that's the first time I've heard of SoundCloud from VA. So, great. I'd like to hear some more. All right, Gene, you got first dibs. Gene, are you muted?
I'm not ready. I'm not ready.
Oh, okay. Casey, how about you?
Yeah, I really liked this one. I had mixed emotions throughout, which I always love when a poem kind of tricks my brain a little bit, because generally I'll get a feeling and I'll be like, oh, I know what this is. And then all of a sudden it'll change. I'm like, oh, oops. But... No, it was really interesting. I like the tone she took on it. It really did kind of give you that, like, guilty feeling. And then when she decides to kill the husband, I thought that was really interesting and a great touch to the poem. And that she ends up in prison and all that. The ending is actually really phenomenal. You know, she's feeling trapped inside a marriage, but now she lives in a prison, so which is worse. It's scantily, I don't know if it's scantily clad, that might not be the word, but it's scandalous, I don't know. It's a good poem. I'm not going to lie, I did want to comment that the second stanza where she says, another man awaits her rival, someone to give her life revival, but she is married to an older man whose death has not gone to her plan. I kind of giggled a little bit because I was like, hee, hee, hee. Like, that's right. You go do you, girl. Like, that's terrible.
No, it's just that. I kind of walked it along that way too, but a little differently. There's an Eagles song that talks about a young, pretty woman married to an older man who knows she's stepping out on him with a younger man. And that's what I got from those first couple of stanzas. But that death angle that you hit on the second stanza, I thought that in that moment he had changed his will so she wouldn't end up with anything except her young lover. But then when that fifth stanza walked in, I said, oh, yeah, a twisted note that walks the longest stride. Yeah, a knife in his chest, and him begging her for help and she leaves the knife. Ah, hell, I'm going to go run to my lover, but you know what? Damn, I got caught. I didn't think this out very well. So there is a touching note to a bit of humor in it because it was twisted on that fifth stanza, and I wasn't quite prepared for that one. I said, oh, damn, that went horribly wrong. So you're right. Gene, we're coming back to you now.
Oh, see, I'm ready now. How about it? Wow. I'm so ready. I can't have too many more disasters today. You know, I thought this tale was well told, and I thought it was a nicely told story of unfaithfulness and deception. A great ending stands. Her money's gone, her honey too, and soon her looks will fade. She felt trapped inside a marriage. Now prison's the home she's made. You know, I think I just stayed unhappy for a while rather than being, you know, I mean, you get three hots and a cot, but I can't imagine, like, wanting that to be your situation. Foolishness. Anyway, wonderful job, Darkened Auras. And hey, thanks for that sound set. I'm glad you're starting to make those. I look forward to having more of those appear on the show. So I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Okay. Now, I have no idea where I was going because everything I go to do, I end up with, you know what? I think I'm just going to beat the odds here. I'm going to play EJ Cool's. Preview twice tonight. So I'm going to try it and see what happens. I'll probably have somebody else's, and that would just crack me up. So here we go. And it wouldn't surprise me, actually. Okay, so here, well, we almost go. Wait. Oh, Lord. Here it is. Okay, we're going to try this. The audio is labeled Sleepwalker. The poem is labeled Sleepwalker. And hopefully it's her voice.
Sleepwalk by EJ Cool. Artificial intelligence simulating psychiatry. Machines dictate humanity. Blasphemic mimicry of empathy. Devolve into automaticity. Multiplicitous xenobot replicants conduct homo erectus experience. Cybersex and neurotic neural net. Neuralink to neuroses. Collect and perfect lifelike interactions. Pre-approved digital subterfuge. Self-aware fellatio for the unaware flaccid-cocked cuckold corpses buried in corrupted data banks, defragmented, disintegrated, inseminated blank memory tanks, hardline hardwired hardware, pornographic file share, rock-hard hard drive hive mind spyware, softwire gestalt software malware, copacetic parasitic codependent symbiotic neoplasm lineage, stillborn and barcode-branded bombastic handbasket bassinets, defecated Drosophila byproducts, toxic waste genesis spread by zombified eugenicists.
Great read, EJ. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Well, I'll tell you what, it couldn't have been read better, and it had to be read that way. There was almost a robotic note to the tone of voice and the layout of the thought, especially considering the cadence that she had to go through as well, the thoughts of psychiatry, humanity, empathy, or automaticity, and a touch of quite a few things in here, which I will leave those to other people just because we're a little early on the air yet. But I like the thought disfragmented, disintegrated, inseminated blank memory tanks, hard line, hardwired, hardware, pornographic files. There's a kind of note to that scene in The Matrix when you first get unplugged and you realize there's an opportunity for being in The Matrix. Also being outside the matrix, red-pilled, black-pilled, alive or semi-autonomous within a tube, getting fed and having everything extricated from you as you feed into the machine itself. Damn. Great read, EJ. Thank you. And Casey, how about you?
So I thought this was really smart. I actually followed the writer because of this poem. I think it's really intelligent. I think it's really well done. The way that she wrote it and the way that she read it was just perfect. But it's really interesting because it's almost it's like relating somebody who is addicted to like sexual pleasures
to someone who is addicted to, like, the internet and plugged in, is probably how I would put it. But it's really interesting because, and there is studies that show that people become addicted to the computer, to their phones, to things like that, because it releases, like, getting likes, right? And we get likes from people. It releases endorphins into our brains, and we become actually addicted. And so it's really just an interesting take on it. You know, she talks about, my favorite lines in here is, flaccid, cocked, cuckold corpses buried in corrupted data banks. That's so true. I mean, it's just, it's like this, like she says here, copacetic, parasitic, codependent, symbiotic neoplasm lineage. It's just like a bigger look, but it's, I like the simplicity that she wrote it in, even though it's complex words and a complex idea. It's simple the way that she put it, and it just works so well with the big picture that we're all kind of plugged into this, you know, machine, call it the matrix or whatever you want, and we're just, like, sucking in these endorphins, and we're getting high off of them all the fucking time, and we're getting high off of them, like, on the TV. We're getting high off of them on our computers. We're getting high off of them on our phones. We're getting, you know, fucked up all the time by ideas, and it's crazy. The craziest part is that, like, we are also beings that can be manipulated and, you know, our thought patterns can change just with continuous, like, repetitive things, right? So it's actually a study as well that if you see, for example, I used to be in marketing. If you see an ad 7 times, you start to remember it. And then after that point is when you start to want to go to that place, you know, see it, hear it, whatever, the name of a business, a place. Let's talk Coca-Cola, right? All of a sudden, it's more enticing, it feels safer because you've seen it so many times. So I'm going off on a tangent, but it's just so, it's a really big picture poem that she did here, and it's so true. So it's such a cool way that she connected it. Just like any other addiction, you know, you're essentially jacking yourself off all day while you're watching TikToks and playing on Instagram and Facebook. You're just jacking yourself off. It's great. I loved it.
Excellent. Thank you, Casey. All right, Jean, how about you? Oh, Jean.
Yeah, I told you about these days. You know, I thought it was a great piece. Great alliteration throughout. I appreciated the sci-fi quality of the piece. And there's many interesting concepts throughout. So it's nice work. And well done, DJ Paul. I only tried to play it 3 times. Can't help it. Okay. And the next one I'm going to put up, which I guess will be our last piece for the night, is going to be by Siegel. And I want to give it a read. I have about 3 carryovers, I think, 3 or 4. So this is called A Scribe by Siegel. I'm not a poet. So every now and then a faceless one appears without invitation, demanding, controlling, selfishly shouting words, insistent on dictation. Go away. I've better things to do. Sometimes late at night on the darkest side of dawn, an uninvited guest crashes across the threshold, racing through the shadows of my dreams, disturber of peace, demonic muse, cruel taskmaster, most hellish of fiends. Right, you fool, hurry, else the verse forever lost. Impossible to ignore, whirling round and round, I do not create the words, merely write them down. I am a scribe. And fine.
Great read, Jean. Thank you. I like that thought for the muse being the life edge in that moment. Right, you fool, hurry, else the verse forever lost, that insistent note of, hey, I am not this, yet I produce this. I'm just the voice, the one with the pen in my hand and the ink that shows that which my mind conjures up in those wee hours of the night, where all of a sudden I am awoken with the urge to just ink out what is there on the tip of my tongue, so to speak, or the tip of my brain. I like this one. Nicely done, Seagull. Thank you. And Casey, how about you?
I was really impressed with this. It kind of hit on a level, right? Because I think a lot of poets feel that way. They have sort of these almost, and I love how she describes it as like, I don't know if it's a he or she, it must be, I'm not sure. but they describe it as sort of an intrusive thought almost. Like you're trying to do something and then boom, this inspiration hits you and like you have to write about it because that's who you are. You know, that's it's part of your brain. You have to get it out. I think that's how poets are. And so it's really cool because I've seen a lot of different definitions of what a poet is. And it's had a couple favorites, but this may be my new favorite definition of a poet. And it's to say that they're a scribe with intrusive thoughts. Just really fantastic. I loved it.
Excellent. Thank you, Casey. And Jean, how about you?
Well, I don't think I'm on mute, and I don't think I'm going to put up the wrong thing, so I'll try and talk now. Very well written, I thought. It wasn't super long. It didn't need to be. And I think that many of us have felt this way from time to time. You know, when that poem comes to you and it just kind of falls out onto the paper, you know, with just almost a minimal assist, you know, I think that we all have kind of felt that it's come to us from somewhere else from time to time. And I really enjoyed the piece, and I want to thank Helen for sharing with us. I always appreciate when she does. She's a great poet. Or scribe, whichever way we want to word it. But well done, and thank you again.
We're at the back end. You want to hit on a couple of things before we say goodnight?
Yeah, I think so. First, I want to let you know, anyone who's listening, Martha Gettle, Poetic Picasso, Jack Tomkovic, and Kiku, I have your poems to carry to next Friday. Apologize, but, you know, time is time. You know, it takes a while to get through everybody's poems, and I want everybody to have a fair shake. So feel free to tune in then, and we'll read your pieces. And I look forward to those. I want to thank everybody who put their poems up for tonight. Wonderful poems, wonderful topics. You know, obviously Friday's because, you know, we're not locked in. So it's always a surprise where we go. Casey, I want to thank you for calling in and joining us. Kellen, thanks for popping in. I saw the hit and run. It's okay. Lex, thanks for co-hosting with me, as always. And, another wonderful night. So what do we have? We have Parts Center Parting coming up after this at 12:30. And then tomorrow night we have Chino.
Ekphrasia.
Exploring Ekphrasis. I always hesitate on that one. And then Sunday we have Rex. And Rex is running a Rod Stewart contest. So everybody check it out. Check out the contest. Check out the board. Feel free to put up a piece. We look forward to reading them on Sunday. So am I missing anything, Rex? Is there something I'm forgetting?
No, Rod Stewart is on Sunday, so there's plenty of space. And the following Sunday, I got four songs by Zeppelin doing a little myth and legend from Zepp. So that ought to be good, too.
Very nice, very nice. protect. And that we want to look forward to. And thank you, everyone who listened in tonight, and we hope to see you soon. Thank you, Rex.
All right, guys. Good night. Good night, Casey.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. Thank you all. We'll see you again soon.